I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Tanya Ward Goodman. She is author of the memoir Leaving Tinkertown, published by University of New Mexico Press. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for having me.
So this is a real New Mexico memoir about your father, about his life and death. Your father was an artist who loved circuses and carnivals, and he created this giant artwork slash home slash museum, which is called Tinkertown, which is still there outside of Albuquerque. What was Tinkertown like, and what was it like for you to grow up there?
Well, it was kind of amazing. I feel like the house is my sibling to some extent because it grew up around me. My parents bought that house when I was just about 1 year old, and my dad just started building things, and he was always on the road with the carnival. He was a carnival show painter, and he was a sign painter, and he built all kinds of amazing displays for, you know, the local malls and Christmas decorations, and did a lot of fine art as well. He was in the arts and crafts for a lot. He painted and wood carved and did huge etchings. And so I kind of grew up always feeling like, well, there was always something going on, and he was always making anything. I think when we were ever bored, he'd say, well, come on out to the shop and we'll just open some paint, or here's some sandpaper, sand all these little things. So we were just constantly kind of having a very interesting and creative life.
And this structure or series of spaces grew up around you, as you say, made of bottles and cement and wooden thread spools and all kinds of things. I think your dad had a sign somewhere that said, I did all this while you were watching TV.
Yes, yeah, he did say that. And we sometimes would say, you know, is that a little judgy? And he was like, no, but it's true. It's all I do, you know. He's always building and building. He started building the bottle walls when I was in high school, actually. And he had built a building for the Western town. He has a wood-carved animated miniature Western town that he'd made. And he'd been carrying it around in a trailer for a long time, and then it was packed up in boxes. And he just, I think he started building really wanting to just see it all out for himself. And then people always wanted to come by our house and visit. So he started charging them a dollar. And he put one of those gas station bells in the driveway. And when I was, I think, a sophomore in high school, he opened the doors to Tinkertown. He and my stepmother just decided, okay, we're having a museum. And the bell would ring and somebody would go out and charge a dollar. And they'd walk around in our backyard.
Now, before you were born, your parents traveled around with circuses or carnivals, maybe not circuses, but even when that stopped, your dad was still what's called with it?
Yes.
What
yes.
does that term mean?
With it, to carny folks, means you're with the show, and you can just say to someone, I'm with it, and then they'll stop bugging you. You know, when you walk down the carnival, like if you're on the lot and all those people are trying to get you to throw a ball into a hoop to win a giant teddy bear, you just say, I'm with it. Then they know you're one of them, and you're not part of that. But my dad was on the road before I was born, traveling around. He had the miniature Western town in a trailer, and then he had this kind of show called World of the Weird that had a lot of photographs of, you know, giants and tiny people and bearded ladies. And they would hire some kid every time they stopped to jump out and scare people at the end.
And you learned something about that life when you were small. You did a little bit of traveling. You were around your father. What did that kind of childhood teach you?
I think it taught me flexibility. I think the most important thing that I learned growing up was flexibility. We lived what my dad always called sort of feast or famine. You know, he worked for cash, so he would go out and paint a bunch of rides or a bunch of things, and he'd have a paper bag full of cash, and we would, woo, live awesomely, and then you know, we'd run out, and then go, okay, well, now we're back to, like, macaroni and cheese and whatever. And I think we were very flexible. And even now, I'm always trying to teach my kids, you know, eat anything that anyone puts in front of you. Sleep anywhere. And honestly, the world is your oyster, because then you're not bothered, you know?
It's funny also that, I mean, you live that life, and your father loved you, and I guess your parents split up early. Your father remarried a wonderful woman who's really described very lovingly in the book and very,
amazing.
I think, accurately. But there's also a kind of portrait of yourself as somebody who wants to wear traditional clothes and little pleated skirts and things like that.
I did. I think it was, I wasn't quite sure who I was. I wasn't sure I was with it. Do you know? I was there, but I always felt like there was something else that I think I was. And so I think a lot of this book is about identity.
Yeah.
And kind of finding my identity as my dad was losing his. And I think I was really wrapped up in being his daughter, and whatever that meant, whether that meant sleeping in the back of the pickup truck while he painted signs, or, you know, running around on the carnival lot, or whatever, mixing up cement and building bottle walls in the backyard. I think that was his identity. And it took me a long time, and really his illness, for me to sort of step back and say, oh, you know, I do like a pleated dress. I like things to be really tidy and not so not so haphazard, you know. And it was a really hard time for me to have to kind of figure that out. And I think I was lucky to be able to do it and to sort of understand, oh, this is who I am, and it's not a bad thing.
So the book describes several road trips that you took with your dad. One of them, which was very kind of sweet and poignant, was when your dad first drove you to college when you were 18 and sort of drove you halfway across the country. And then suddenly the parting was much more painful than either of you might have imagined. Then there was another road trip where you drove with him to Los Angeles, where you, as a young 20-something, had moved, and you began to realize that something was not right.
Yes, yes. That was the trip where I really sort of saw the changes in my dad, that I realized were not just him being older. It wasn't him being sort of eccentric or wacky the way I'd known him to be. It was really different. He was very angry. He didn't really understand how to read a map, which was, you know, he had driven all over the country, and the Rand McNally Road Atlas, he always called our family Bible. So he, for him to open that and look at it like it was, you know, written in gibberish, it was very scary. It was a really scary trip to me. And every time I would say, well, are you okay? Or what's happening? He would get more and more angry. And our relationship had always been so good. And so sort of free of that, like free of kind of nonsense, we would be able to really ask each other hard questions or kind of come up with answers, that it was very startling to me. And it was something that I kind of chewed on for a long time. It took me almost 3 months before I called my stepmother to say, hey, do you think there's something wrong with Dad?
And then, of course, those were the early signs of Alzheimer's disease. And so how did, I mean, you talk about the anger, how did his personality change, and how did it not change?
Well, I think he was quicker to be angry. He was confused and quiet. I think that was very, my dad was always a great storyteller and kind of the life of the party. And, you know, he was just constantly telling stories and sort of including people. And Alzheimer's really kind of took him back a bit. And that was at the beginning, I think, when he was really feeling scared. I don't think he knew what was happening. It's so strange to have, it's almost like you're taken over by a spirit. It just, like, wow, I don't remember what I'm doing, or that doesn't look familiar to me. And I think that was so scary to him that it made his anger a lot worse. Later, as we kind of understood what was happening, it kind of, like, loosened him up more. In a way, it was lucky. We always say, you know, it's great that he wasn't a banker, because he would have had to lose his job. And he had a roadside attraction, so he didn't have to, like, quit his job. Or we never had to say, Dad, you have to stay home. He just really liked staying home. So he would go out and tell people stories and show them things and say, oh, I just made this. And we wouldn't say, well, you made that 25 years ago. We would say, yeah, I just made that. And isn't it great? And people would be really impressed, and they wouldn't even know, because he just seemed like an eccentric storyteller.
And he kept building things.
He did. He kept building things and drawing and painting and making these amazing scrapbooks, and really almost until the very end. Even he wound up living in the last year of his life in a Alzheimer's facility, And even there, he would paint he really liked to paint on brown paper towel for some reason, those brown papers. And he would paint these wonderful, and you could tell, like, he knew how to hold a brush because the line would change. You know, he understood how to make it narrow and wider. And he would paint these, like, little kind of not landscapes, not lines, just, I don't know. But he was really constantly creating things and making things.
We're talking to Tanya Ward Goodman about her memoir, Leaving Tinkertown. There was a kind of mantra all throughout your childhood, the show must go on. What did that look like during sort of the end time of your dad's life?
Well, it looked very real in some ways in that the Tinkertown is a working museum. And so the show must go on meant somebody had to get up and open the gate in the morning and sell tickets, because now it went from being something where we were charging a few people a dollar in 1980 to, you know, they have, there's a huge, fairly chunky amount of people who come every year to the museum. And so every day people are driving down and, oh, we saw this in the road, you know, AAA guide, or we saw this wherever. And so even when we were in the throes of trying to take care of my dad or make sure that things got done, we had to still open the museum. And I think that provided some structure for our days, and definitely for my dad's day, because he could go out and talk to people, and we knew we had to kind of get it together. That was helpful to us to go, okay, well, the gates are opening at 9, so no matter how sad or angry or mad or whatever, people are coming, and we're going to put on a brave face.
There's an extraordinary moment in the book where you write about what your dad had said long before he was sick, long before he had Alzheimer's, about how he would like to die.
Yeah, yes. About being, like, frozen in the... yes, he had this idea that he always said when the big one comes, like, the bottle walls are going to kind of melt around him.
The nuclear
bomb. Yes, the nuclear
bomb. Landing on Tinkertown.
Yes, it's going to explode and melt everything. And he and his old lady, my stepmother, are going to be making love, and they'll be frozen in glass like those insects in amber. And that was always kind of like, really? but yeah, I think he had this idea of, like, going down with the ship at Tinkertown, you know, no matter what it was, whether it was a nuclear bomb or whatever. I think he really had a very clear idea that I built this, this is where I am, and this is where I'll stay.
Now, there's something so primal. I mean, this is a memoir, and I was describing it to somebody, and they said, oh, that's a novel? And I said, no, it's a memoir. But there's something so primal about the way things played out. You, for example, you moved his mother, your dad's mother, your grandmother, to New Mexico, and then right around the time you're engaged to be married, she passes away.
Yes.
And then you get married and have a baby, and a few days after the baby is born, your father passes
yes.
away. And shortly before your father passes away, your stepmother finds a new love in her life. It's sort
yes.
of like this amazing cycle of birth and death and love.
It is. It is. I mean, I think we were so gifted. It was a horrible experience, one I wouldn't wish on anyone, but we were really gifted by the way it turned out. And I think it is something that we kind of drew into our lives, and we worked for, and it's kind of the show must go on, you know, life is going to continue. And it was really amazing to be pregnant while my father was dying, and the way Alzheimer's work is you sort of roll backwards and your brain forgets and then your body forgets. And by the end he was in, you know, a full fetal position, and my son was inside me, and it was just like that moment of, wow, here they are, they're probably crossing in the night somewhere. And and so to sort of lose him and gain my son at the same time was remarkable and horribly sad and joyful and exactly like life. Exactly like, we just, all this stuff piles up. I don't think it's neat. I don't think life is ever going to be tidy.
No, and there's so many different kinds of pain and so many different kinds of letting go.
Yeah.
that you describe.
Yes. Oh, completely. Because you start to let go immediately of my son, my baby. I brought this week-old baby to New Mexico from Los Angeles for my father's memorial. He died a week after my son was born. And the morning of the memorial, I was changing his diaper and his umbilical cord fell off. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's already separating from me. And here I am ultimately like separating from my dad. And yet here we are all kind of in Tinkertown just the way he would want us. You know, we're all here in the museum with the baby and all the friends.
And a memorial that really was very fitting to his life.
Absolutely. It turned into just a wild party. People just kept showing up and we made green chili cheeseburgers and everyone brought really amazing things to contribute to the museum and it was beautiful.
So the book is called Leaving Tinkertown. How did you and when in this whole process did you decide to start writing it?
I started writing it a little bit while it was happening. I took a lot of notes because I don't have a terrific memory, and especially when I'm going through something enormous, I kind of, my whole body shuts down and I just sort of, I'm just doing it. You know, I used to sort of say, my head is gone, I'm just hands. And in order to kind of bring it back to my head, I have to write it down. And so I just started taking notes throughout it. And I wrote a lot of emails. I was dating my now husband and we moved apart. I moved here and he was in LA. And so I was sending him lots of emails and I would just kind of tell him in those emails, wow, this crazy thing happened. And we saved all of those. And so I had this kind of pile of notes. And then when I moved back to Los Angeles, I was really, it was more about just kind of processing what happened. And I started kind of trying to write it together as a story. And I wrote an essay about moving my grandmother home to Albuquerque. And I gave it to a friend who had someone who was going through a similar situation. And he said, wow, that's my friend. Just couldn't believe how helpful that was. He said, it's like she found a friend. And I thought, that's good. You know, that's what I want, that I want to be able to be helpful, because it was very useful to me to read other people's stories as I was going through this. And so then I just started kind of writing it and working on parts, and things would pop up and I would write what seemed hot at the time. If I really remembered something or if I found something that I could really hear my dad's voice. For a long time I wrote because it kept him with me. I could really hear him. And so I would go into my little office and we'd just hang out. And I almost didn't want to stop writing because he was still so alive for me.
Very interesting. Yeah, there's this amazing dream that you describe right at the end of the book that you had about your dad. And it's a recurring dream that you never allowed to finish. And one night you allowed the dream to play out.
Yes. I always dreamt that I was on a train, or I would dream that somebody told me my dad had died. My whole life I would wake up and I would be really afraid of that. And I would not want to know. I would just immediately wake myself up and go find him. And I remember being very anxious about that almost as long as I could remember, that he was going to die. And so I would dream about it all the time. And right before he died, I had this dream that he had died, and I got on this train, and instead of waking myself up, I just stayed on the train, and eventually he came and sat down next to me on the train, and I was like, I thought you were dead. And he just, he said, no, like, death is bullshit, Tanya, you know, and when I was writing toward the book, I had that dream in my head, and I was like, this is what it's about, really. This is it, is that he's alive with me. He's here as I'm writing, and he's here with my children. They know him as well as they could because they go to Tinkertown, and they hear all these stories, and they tell people about, my Grandpa Ross does this, and he built that, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like he's alive. I mean, it took a long time, I think, for them to realize, for my son especially, like, we never see Grandpa Ross. And I said, well, you've never seen him.
Yeah.
He's not here. Wow, that's weird. That's weird. I think he's here somewhere. So I don't think being dead means you're really gone.
Yeah, especially when you've got this manifestation of your entire life's work.
Yeah.
Which is your house.
Which is right there. You're just walking through, I think, his head, his heart. You know, you're just there with him. And you really feel it.
Now, How do you, if you do, work with, for example, other people whose families have Alzheimer's? Have you made kind of connections with those communities?
I have. And I've talked to the Alzheimer's Association a little bit. I've done some work there. I've written some other things. I've tried to connect with different Alzheimer's groups online. And it's just really, I feel like the best thing to do, and I've gotten so many lovely letters from people who've read the book and said, oh my gosh, this is what I'm going through, or, you know, I can't tell you how helpful it is to read this. And I think it's just to be, you know, a kind of kindred spirit on this weird adventure that is Alzheimer's, and just to go, yeah, I know. And I think that's all sometimes people need to hear. It's not, oh, it's going to get better, or, oh, whatever, because, I don't know, it isn't. I mean, there's a very sort of, you know what's going to happen. But for someone to say, I know where you are, and I know what's happening, it is a great relief to hear that.
And it's different from, and here's what you should do when this happens.
Exactly. Yeah, I can say, well, this is what we did. But I think it's really different. Alzheimer's affects people so incredibly differently. You know, I think every person has a really unique experience because of who they were. You know, my grandmother had Alzheimer's at the same time that my father did, and she went through it very differently. All the things that she sort of liked to do were very small to begin with, and so she just folded a lot of laundry and got like a kind of like, oh, did little things, and then every so often she'd crack open and tell us some crazy story that I don't even know if it was true, but it kind of perked her up in a way and opened her, and she told us a lot of stuff I don't know that we would have understood if it hadn't happened. But that was very different, you know? And so I think I can say, well, when my dad did this, we did that. But I never feel like I can truly offer like a definitive, here's how you handle this, because I don't know if there is one.
Yeah, and your father was really pretty young. He was 58 years old when he was diagnosed, and that's called early onset.
Yeah.
It's far before you expect things like that to happen.
Yes. It took a long time to really find out what it was, because I don't think at that time, this was 15 years ago, Alzheimer's was not as much in the press as it is now. I mean, I think it could even still be more in the press. We could all have so much more awareness of it. It's affecting so very many people, not just with the illness, but the caregivers and the healthcare system is being overwhelmed. But we didn't really know, and we didn't expect, you know, we never would say, oh, it's Alzheimer's because you're 58. We thought it was all kinds of other things.
How did it feel when the memoir was published?
Oh, it was lovely. You know, it was really great to sort of have this object that was, for me, a love letter to my family, and to sort of introduce my dad to people who didn't know him and hear, I love your dad, you know? And that was really, I don't know, that was really, really special and continues to be really special to me when, you know, I have this great, huge love for my family. And so now there's this kind of following for them. You know, my stepmother visited recently in LA, and we went to this little party, and all of these people who had read the book were like, oh, Carla's here. I love her. And I just thought, yeah, me too, you know. And it's really, I think it's great to have that out there and to kind of share that experience. And I don't know. I think if you love somebody so much, you should be able to like really have a parade pretty much all the time for them. And so this was kind of a parade for my family, who is, I feel, really fortunate to be a part of.
Is the Tinkertown Museum still open?
It is. It's open April through the end of October every year from 9 in the morning to 6 at night. And my stepmother, Carla, runs it, and she has this great help group of wonderful people who are helping keep it alive and running. And it is really marvelous. I was selling tickets there yesterday, and it's really fun to see people come through and experience it for the first time or the millionth time. You know, there's always repeats and really cool.
And that is in, it's out right outside of Albuquerque.
Right outside Albuquerque on the Crest Road, on the road up to the Sandia Crest.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, one of the people in the book we haven't talked about is your brother Jason.
Yes.
Who was, I don't know if he still is, a tattoo artist in Albuquerque.
He is. He's a tattoo artist. He owns Star Tattoo, and he continues to be a tattoo artist. He tattooed my dad a lot when he was ill, and that was one of the greatest sort of moments of their relationship, was just to sort of tattoo all the things that my dad loved on him.
Oh, my goodness. Did you take away any of your father's artistic gifts?
A little. I can draw a little, but I don't think I got what we always used to call the magic hand. You know, my brother really does. He's constantly drawing and painting and building, and he reminds me a lot of my dad. Yeah, just the energy of him, his kind of need to make stuff all the time, is a lot like my father.
Now, you and your brother Jason are going to be doing an event this Saturday.
We are. We're doing a reading and a show. My brother's a musician. He plays with the band Sad Baby Wolf and Starsky, and he's doing solo some songs he wrote when my dad was ill, and I'll be reading from the book, and we're doing a fundraiser for the Alzheimer's Association. It's at the Center for Spiritual Living in Albuquerque on Saturday the 28th at 7 o'clock.
7 in the evening.
Yes.
Excellent for anybody who wants to head down to Albuquerque.
Absolutely. It'll be a good night.
Tanya Ward Goodman is author of the book Leaving Tinkertown. It's published by University of New Mexico Press. Do you have any other projects in the...
Well, I've been writing some essays. I write a lot for a blog called The Next Family, and I'm working on a novel.
Ah, well, we look forward to all of that. And is there a website for this book?
My website is tanyawardgoodman.com, and you can find information there. And there's a Facebook page for Leaving Tinkertown.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.